Welcome back to another exciting episode of Sublime Soul Surrender. I am Cosmos MD, your host, with a very dear friend and somebody that I am sure is going to enlighten all of you and open your minds. I am going to introduce you to Elizabeth Goodrays, who I have met through serendipity and circumstance that I could have never predicted, and I'm so incredibly grateful for. As we delve into this conversation, we're going to have a deep dive into the world of books and writing and imagination and authenticity. And I am going to let Elizabeth introduce herself to all of you so that you can hear her voice, and then we can explore what is here unfolding in your ears. Welcome, Elizabeth.
Thank you so much. I am so excited to be here with you. And as you said, my name is Elizabeth. How much would you like me to say at this point by way of introduction?
I want the audience to hear whatever it is you would like to say about yourself. What makes Elizabeth Goodrays, Elizabeth Goodrays? Like what is your, maybe your mark on this planet so far, what you're here to do, why you and I are in community with each other right now, however you would like to introduce yourself.
In that case, I will say, because you and I are working together, spoiler alert, you're writing a book and I am your editor and book coach. And yeah, and you've completed your first draft. Woo! Congrats Yay! On that. But so that is really present in the forefront of my mind in this conversation. There are a number of things I do. I'm a Gemini, so we could be here all day if I tell you everything.
It brings us two Geminis here, right here. So the audience can really enjoy the way that this conversation is going to flow.
Yes. But so I have a lot of irons in the fire, but I'll say for the purpose of this conversation, I am a writer, editor, book coach, and my entire career has been involved with the written word in some way. And from a young age, I found refuge in books. I didn't have the easiest childhood, and books always just spoke to me. I spent most of my childhood with my nose in a book. I used to read a book every day. And just the feeling of words sort of filtering through my brain is very soothing. I loved that we could experience other worlds, other places in this world through other people's words and step into other people's life experience that was so different from my own. That just has always been so fascinating and alluring. And I always knew that I wanted to work with the written word in some way. And so I've done that in different capacities. I studied literature. I was a newspaper reporter, then magazine writer and editor, and working in marketing, thinking about the power of words to persuade or evoke a certain emotion that brought yet another perspective layered on top. And then more recently, book editing, book coaching is really just a dream come true for me, helping people bring their stories into the world in book form, in that long form where you really get to take a journey with the author, of the type that I used to immerse myself in, you know, as a young child. So there you go. That was fast forwarding through 40 years.
Oh my God. I just love that trip I just went on in your main, in your mind, what you were envisioning as you were describing all these things. I can't see, but I could hear through your words such description that I was already going into my journey in my mind, listening to you talk about the refuge in books, the books that spoke to you, words that have soothed your brain. And your choice of vocabulary to describe how you feel with books is really delicious, fascinating, alluring, exploring other worlds. It's really it's really an incredible process to step into the world of another person in the role you have as an editor and as a coach, because you are not the writer, but you are immersing yourself in the writing process of that one person that I have personally experienced with you already in 1 year so far. And it's like you become an extension. I feel like you have a tentacle of mine. if I could be a three-armed person, you have one of those arms. And it's like you've developed such a skill over these years of you doing these different things between being a reporter and an editor and a marketer and now an editor and a coach for books, to be able to hear what somebody wants to say, read their word, and then guide them to make that word or the words really speak to what somebody may or may not have delivered properly, or acknowledge what they've written and make them feel really fucking good about what they've written, or do what you do really well, the questioning. So what does this mean? Or what are you trying to say? Or take this to another place. And I just have to say, as an author that's working with you, you are an absolute gift. Your journey, this experience that you just described to us, your life that got you here, sounds so beautiful for the world to receive. And I'm so sorry that your childhood was difficult, but I'm so happy that you were able to find a way to create magic for it and for yourself.
Well, thank you. I am just honored by your praise and just taking it in. And it feels really good to receive, because it has been such a treat to work with you and help you bring your story into the world. You're a gifted writer, and I absolutely cannot wait for the world to receive your story in book form.
Oh, thank you, Elizabeth. For the listeners that may not know, I am writing a book. It is called One Birth, Many Lives. As Elizabeth said, the first draft has been submitted. So now we're in the first phase of editing. And I wanted to have Elizabeth come up here to talk to all of you who are listening about what it means to be a writer, what the process is to hold space as an editor and as a book coach. And you are not only editing my book, you're editing a lot of books. And so you're doing a lot of different things. I think it's a powerful opportunity to be able to talk about why we write. What is this experience for you, being both a published author and an editor? You have such an interesting, colorful experience. Would love to hear whatever you think you would like to start off with in this exploration of the word.
Sure. So I can talk about our process of working together. And as I understand it, well, let's just back up a step and say the publishing industry has changed by leaps and bounds since I was a kid. You know, growing up, it was always this idea that if you want to write a book, you first do a sample chapter or maybe an outline or both, and then you get an agent and your agent pitches it and you get a book advance, and then you're working with the publisher to complete the book. So that model is still out there, but many of the books that come to publication now do not follow that model. And, you know, disruption in the industry, I compare it often to the music industry as well. So we had the big recording companies that would impose all of these creative restraints on the artists, trying to make them more marketable. And with the disruption in the recording industry, now artists can bring music directly to their fans. And of course, you know, it still helps if you have the weight of a big marketing machine behind you and all of the resources that go into that, but you don't need that anymore. Put your music online, just record a video, upload it to YouTube. And I do think the publishing industry or the publishing landscape has followed some very similar patterns. So what a lot of people actually are surprised to learn is that many of the books you order, even, you know, not used, I'm talking a new book on Amazon, many of those now are print on demand. You know, the large, you know, major publishers, of course, still do a big print run and send out, you know, they have them in a warehouse somewhere ready to ship. But a lot of books, and you can't even necessarily tell the difference, a lot of the books are print on demand, where you order one copy and it's printed for you when you order it.
Yeah, I really want people to hear that, because when I learned that talking to you and Carrie, I was surprised. And for those people that may not know what print on demand is, can you tell them a little bit more about what that means? what's actually happening in the background when they're ordering a book on Amazon, for example.
Yeah. Well, I don't have, I mean, we're almost at the limits of my understanding, but essentially, as noted, you have a production manager that you're working with, who's, you know, that's not my expertise, but it's what I said, that instead of doing a print run of 1,000 and having them sitting in a warehouse, and then maybe you don't sell all of those and you have to clearance them out, or they sit for years and you're paying storage costs. So instead of that, it's just one by one. When somebody orders on Amazon, it is then printed and mailed to them. And it's that simple, but I will say the production values of print on demand have really come along to the point that you almost can't tell the difference, or in some cases cannot tell the difference at all. There still are some, like we've been talking about for your book, there are some sort of premium features that may not be available, like an embossed cover, for example. But again, this is changing all the time and technology is coming along. It used to be that print-on-demand books looked less professional, and I really think that distinction is just narrowing and collapsing. I feel like there was one more thing I wanted to say, but did I answer?
You answered this beautifully, and I'd like the fact that you've taken it to that step so people really can understand that when they're ordering a book, for example, on Amazon, it is coming for them. I think that's a pretty cool idea. Walking into a bookstore is something I love. Holding the book and like seeing 7 or 8 copies of one title, it's a very different image than sitting on your computer, opening up Amazon and ordering a book.
Yes. So yes,
I think that there are some ways to look at that and say, oh, I don't want to do that. I want to go to the bookstore. I want to have that experience and be in a room where there's other people that are maybe like-minded because they're there to buy books or to read. And then there's a flip of, oh, but if I press this button, I'm saving potentially the trees and I'm getting a book made just for me. How interesting. How different. It's just, we could sit here for hours and probably debate the back and forth of Amazon also like owning the world.
Yes.
But
well, and there are other ways.
Right.
So you, yeah, I mean, you don't have to necessarily use Amazon or only Amazon either. So, but they are the biggest still. The other thing I was going to say is I think when self-publishing was new, I mean, it was very cool to have this option. The big publishing houses were not the only option then. And that was fantastic in and of itself. But are you familiar with vanity publishing, that phrase?
Tell me.
Well, that was the phrase people used for, it was a synonym for self-publishing. And I don't know that it was meant in a derogatory way. I think it was used that way sometimes. And that was definitely how I understood it. I was a teenager at the time when this was all going on. And it was like, oh, well, they just used a vanity publisher. Meaning there were these, you know, shops that would help you self-publish your book, but it's not a quote unquote real publisher. And it was meant to demean like almost, oh, there, it takes away the legitimacy of a book to publish it that way. And just the word vanity to me, like that just felt like, such a slight, right? Like the only reason you would want to self-publish your book is for vanity. It's not because you have a message to share. It's like to make yourself look good and raise your status, because no major publisher wants this book. So then, you know, you must be publishing it for vanity. Like all of that to me was wrapped up in that word. I don't know if that's how other people understood it, but I'm very happy that that phrasing seems to be going by the wayside. And, you know, when I ask people if they know about that, it seems like it's not familiar to you.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that's so fucking full of shame.
Right?
Yeah. Which I would love now for us to kind of expand on what you had said. One of those things you said is that my story isn't, I'm going to paraphrase you, but you said something to the point of my story isn't important to tell, or your story isn't important to tell. Therefore, yeah, you've gone to a vanity publisher. Like, I'm sorry, but everybody's story is important to tell, however they tell it. Even if it is a story that's whispered in somebody's ear. But if you actually...
Amen.
Right? I mean, it's why we're here.
Talking. Yeah, and this comes back around to, we kind of got sidetracked, but you had asked me to talk about my, and it's not just my model. I have mentors that I work with, et cetera, but the model of book coaching that I subscribe to. So the reason I started talking about traditional publishers is, okay, sidebar. Obviously, there are great examples of books we all love that were published through the big publishing houses. I'm not saying it's always a negative experience, but when people do complain about having a bad experience working with a big publisher, or they tried to work with a big publisher and they ended up like trying to get out of their contract because things were, you know, going sideways, it usually has something to do with being asked to make changes to their book that they weren't okay with to make it more marketable. So, you know, speaking as a very broad generalization, but that's a theme that I hear. And so it's like that kind of negative iteration of the publishing experience. It's like, okay, what can we sell and work backwards from that? That's how it plays out. And so by contrast, the model that I like to work with is, what is a story that wants to be told? What wants to come through? So, and this, I mean, it's not just for books. It's also like all creative work. And I like to say actually that each of us is creating our life. So what are you creating? Your life is a work of art. So by the work that you're doing, by anything that you're writing, by the impact you're having with your relationships, what are you creating? And I believe each of us is here with a purpose and a message to share. And we often resist it for various reasons. But we really come into our power when we tap into that flow and we start to listen to, what am I here to do? What am I meant to be sharing? If we can set aside the fear, if we can have some companionship on the journey that makes us feel brave enough to step into that fast flowing river, that's how I see myself as a book coach. And it's very different than, let me write a book that, you know, is marketable and meets these marketing principles. And I feel like I'm bashing marketing, and I don't want to do that because I work in marketing. Marketing is not evil, but there's like a side of marketing that is not so sincere. And when it comes to book coaching and editing, I'm just all about that sincerity and that heartfelt message. So that's through various exercises and coaching. That's what I try to help people tap into when we work together, the story that wants to come through. And then, you know, once the book is written, we can talk about how to market it. But I also feel that people connect with those stories. It's a mistake to say that whatever your story is, it would be a mistake to say it's not marketable, because when we can really get to the power of your story, people are going to connect with it and they're going to want to read it. And that's like the definition of marketing is, you know, reaching people with something compelling that makes them, you know, they hear about your book on a podcast and they want to go buy a copy because they can feel the power in the message that you're sharing.
Yes. I mean, there's 8 billion people on this planet. We cannot say that all 8 billion people only like one thing. That's the whole incredible beauty of human diversity, is every single human being has a unique experience, their own. Even in the same family, even in the same home, you're not living the same life. And I really think we have to value the person that is trying to show up and share, whatever it may be, because there's something that they believe is important enough to say. And we need to hold space for all of these people and all of their voices, however they want to speak up and say it. Whether it's the written word or the spoken word or the sung word or the artist's word, artist's canvas or whatever it may be. I feel that we've not done a good job as humans in general, holding space for different ways of thinking and diverse opinions, evident by millennia of warring across nations and within. So I love that you're stepping up to change that with your presence in your way, when you think about what we give into the world and what we're here for, you're allowing people to show up and share their word, and you're contributing to this beautiful diversity and the welcoming of it.
Thank you for phrasing it that way. I feel like you're really flattering me with your words, and that, I mean, that's how I see it. That's what I aim to do. I think that that is the incredible power of books, that, you know, somebody on the other side of the world, like I could step into their life experience and we can get to know all these different kinds of people through what we're reading. And so, I mean, we've been talking about with your book, there are kind of two, I don't want to say two like target audiences. That's not exactly how I mean to say it. But like, so with all of the themes that that we're exploring in your book, there are people who will connect to what you're writing and they will feel seen because they have never, possibly never seen it on the page before. And they say, wow, somebody shares my experience. I didn't know anybody else felt that way. And that is so powerful in and of itself. But then also there's a group of people that they might read your words and go, wow, I don't feel that way at all. And in fact, it never occurred to me that anybody could feel that way. And you're also, you're opening their minds just by sharing your story. So I think both of those are essential. And yes, I do think books absolutely, and storytelling more broadly, have a role to play in diversity and inclusion and opening people's minds.
Yeah. And I want to say it's not flattery. I'm happy you felt flattered, but it was honesty. And you and I had a bit of a conversation beforehand that was not recorded that I do believe is important to talk about, which is this whole concept of diversity of mind and of thought, the diversity of thinking, the diversity of learning and of understanding and of comprehension. And so I'm going to, for a second, put on my doctor hat on and say that we have done a really poor job of embracing a community of humans that learn and behave in different ways. We have expected people to behave in particular ways, and we name them typical or normal or standard based off of very questionable, in my opinion, very questionable ideals. When was that discovered? What was the population of people that we decided to make those conclusions from? How old were they? How diverse were they? I know a lot of those answers are going to be not satisfying. So when I look at the world now in 2023, I really see most humans as living on a spectrum. And that means the spectrum is the human spectrum, which mm-hmm. will include thinking, behavior, feeling, everything. And so when I think about writing as an example, because that's what we're talking about, there are so many ways that the English language, because we're talking about English books right now, but any language this can probably be used for, can be written. There's so many ways you can write a book in English. We expect to follow traditional ways of writing. And you mailed me a book that follows a very non-traditional way of writing, which I appreciate. And I'm, can you remind me the title? It was Juicy, what was it?
Juicy Pens, Thirsty Paper.
I just want to honor that author, Juicy Pens, Thirsty Paper, written by Sark. What I love about that, I would encourage all of you to go and check this book out, and I'll put it in the show notes. I liked a few things. One, Sark. It's an acronym for the person's full name, which I fucking love. Number two, the book is written as if it's all in pen, marker pen. So it is totally different than an adult book you would have expected to pull off of the shelf that is written like a typewriter. This is as if it's a children's book, but it's not a children's book. It can be, you know, written by a child too, but no, the adult has written this to an audience of people who are intellectuals to think about the process of writing. So I mention this because in a standard world, that would be looked at and said, no, that does not meet the criteria of what I would consider to be a good book. Not me, I'm saying the world of maybe people up there that have a standard. Similarly, authors come from places that are as diverse as that book, where you may think in a different way. Maybe when you speak differently. Maybe you're shy to actually step up. because you don't think you fit. This is who I want to hear what we're going to say next. Mm. If in the audience of the world, somebody has come to this point in our conversation so far, I hope you're here hearing us, because we're going to talk about how people who don't fit into a mold, which is, I think, most people, but how those people who are nervous to step out of their comfort zone, to come out and say, I am going to show up either to speak or to write. And maybe I feel uncomfortable in the human population because I don't think the way my person to the right, the left think. I've been told that because a boss has told me, you should be quiet, you speak too much. Or my teacher has told me, you know, stop thinking like that, think like this person. Or you just feel maybe a little bit awkward because of the way maybe you walk or how you carry your backpack. I don't know, anything. We all are awkward in our own ways of being. I would love for you, Elizabeth, to talk to the audience that could be listening, that may be somewhere in a neurodivergent scale, that could be not neurotypical, and in my world are actually beautiful, colorful human beings, and everybody is on some spectrum of that, but they have been labeled as that and maybe have some shame.
Yes. Okay. A lot to unpack there and to say in response. So I want to focus in on writing as a tool for healing. And there are a couple of angles to this, because I think part of the reason I turned to books as a kid is because I was striking out a little bit socially. I mean, again, that's oversimplifying. I had friends, but there was a lot of awkward stuff that went on, and I felt rejected a lot. And I felt like communicating and writing, I could just be myself and I didn't have to worry about all of these things like, how do I fit in and what do I say to be accepted? I could just say what I felt. And that was, I'm getting emotional as I'm sharing this. But so for people who are quote unquote neurodivergent, I think writing can be a very powerful communication tool, because it just like removes that layer of anxiety, where you're worrying about like, am I picking up on the correct social signals? And oh my gosh, here's what I want to say, but can I say that? Or is that the wrong thing to say? Like, you just get tied up in knots sometimes. And it's really unfortunate because human connection is so vital for all of us. But you know, that's the reality of life, I think, for neurodivergent people and for a lot of people. You know, everyone has some social anxiety, I think. So that's number one. Just writing in and of itself can be very freeing, very affirming, that you can just be who you are. Like, on the, you know, writing in your journal or on your computer is a place where you can just be who you are, unfiltered. There's nobody to mirror anything back to you. You can express yourself in kind of an essential way. And I guess that's really what we are doing in, you know, in the group writing program I facilitated and in the author coaching that I do. I want to encourage people to do that and to tap into that sort of essential nature of who they are and what they want to express. And some people are a little more cut off from that than others. But that's, you know, I have some exercises that help us work through that, but that is really core to what I do as a writing coach. Now, as you were speaking, I was sort of taking a mental journey through the different books of my own that I am working on and have worked on. So let me share a little bit about that, because I think it circles back to what you asked. So I actually have three books that are in progress, none of which have been published. So that's, you know, I guess I need to put my money where my mouth is a little bit and get my story out in the world. Although there is a healing power in writing, even if you never publish it, but also these stories can be very empowering for the people who read them, who relate to them. So we don't want to just hide it under a rock. There are reasons to do that sometimes, but it can be more powerful if you bring it out into the world. Okay. So I got those three that I'm working on, and I'll share a little bit about what those are. But I also just handed off to for the design phase a book that I've been co-writing for the last 2 years. And it actually started out as a ghostwriting project. And now, as it turns out, in the final kind of accounting, I'm a co-author with my name on the cover also. The book is called My Brain Matters. It is all about keeping a healthy brain as we age and some different lifestyle habits that can help prevent and even slow down neurodegeneration, conditions like Alzheimer's, dementia, and even traumatic brain injury, things like, you know, concussions and things that have lasting damage. Our bodies actually have the mechanisms to heal, and we can help enable that through some of our lifestyle factors. So
I want to congratulate you on this. This is a co-authored book. Woohoo! 2 years. That's a lot of time and celebration. Huge. Continue.
Thank you. Yes. And it is, I mean, it's a really important topic. And it's also very interesting how I was feeling maybe a little tentative about the idea of publishing a book with my name on the cover. And here comes this opportunity where it's like, okay, I can be a ghostwriter. I can hide behind the fact that I'm writing this book, but it's going to have someone else's name on it. And by the way, no shade to anyone who uses a ghostwriter. So the ideas, the majority of the ideas from this book or in this book came from my co-author, Dr. Joe DeDuro. One of my favorite people. We've worked together very closely over the last 2 years. It's all his ideas. It really sums up his life's work in the book. And, you know, sometimes the ideas come together when you're working with someone. So just to kind of say a little bit about that, because I think whenever I talk about being a ghostwriter, people are like, what's that? Tell me more about that. It's one way of getting your story into the world. If you sit down and you feel like the writing just isn't coming or you don't know how to put it together, working with a ghostwriter can be really effective. It doesn't mean even that you're not a good writer. It doesn't mean you're passing the work off or any of those kind of negative stereotypes. It's a collaboration. That's the ghostwriting kind of construct in general. But like I said before, I ended up being a co-author because it became clear as we were working together, there are some what we call the recipe chapters. And I had a lot of knowledge from my background as a yoga instructor, nutrition and wellness coach, certified personal trainer, EFT practitioner in training. So there are a lot of different modalities that I have experience with. And I was including some nuggets of wisdom and also a science journalist. So I was drawing on my personal experience quite a bit in what I was writing. And eventually Joe said, I think you should have your name on the cover. So we're doing it. So all that being said, I just thought it was really interesting how I was feeling a little bit shy, as you said, and here life handed me this opportunity, like kind of thrusting me into the spotlight, but like as like a baby step. My name is a little smaller on the cover and that's okay with me right now.
Well, isn't that how it all begins? Everything begins with a baby step. A baby is either going to do a baby step or they're going to end up being like a lizard and they're going to slide on the ground, which is what Neil did before he decided to stand and walk. He did not do the crawling, but they all have baby steps, right? Before we're all of us, any human that's doing anything new of any kind has to start somewhere. Elizabeth, you had so many beautiful starts and this is a huge start. So I love that. And I think it's a nice entry point into your comfort level doing this process to see what you need to do next for the other three books that are waiting on your bookshelf, right?
Yes.
Some experience now. Do you want to talk to us about those three things?
Yeah, I'll just say very generally. So the first one that I started writing on a retreat in Costa Rica in 2019, and this was really my introduction to the approach of let the story that wants to come through just come. And a more, I guess, emotional approach to writing, where this retreat, it was like, we're doing, you know, an exercise with tarot cards, and we're doing breath work, and we're doing and it wasn't exactly ecstatic dance, but like a moving meditation. But so this was not really what I was expecting on a writer's retreat, but it was such a powerful experience for me. And on that retreat, I started writing a book about just some family relationships that I wanted to heal. There is an essay called Writing Into the Wound by Roxane Gay that I use when I teach, and I'm paraphrasing, but she describes the process of writing about trauma as like cleaning out the wound. You got to get the infected and, you know, dead skin stuff out for the wound to heal. So it can be very painful, right? You're using alcohol, you're like scraping the wound, but it's necessary if healing is going to occur. And that really is what the writing process can feel like. And that's why some people avoid it. And that's why it's good to set yourself up with supports like a group program, like a coach, when you're doing that. So that was the first book that I started working on. And then I also have been working on one, which you are familiar with. You've heard parts of it that I shared in the group that the experience we went through together is about breaking free from shame around sex.
Yes.
So, yeah. And then the third one that I've been working on most recently is really just me exploring the idea that I may not be neurotypical, and writing, I guess, essays about just experiences in my life that now, as I look back, they lead me to suspect that I may be neurodivergent. And just trying to figure out, like, you know, I feel like I'm understanding all of these experiences I've had in a new way. And in a sense, that one also is about breaking free from shame, because there are, I can share this one. This is what we were just talking about before. But so I'll finish my sentence. The sidebar of a sidebar. This is how my brain works.
I love it. Elizabeth Unplugged, so everybody out there can relate and say, that's my brain too.
Hope so.
Absolutely.
There are experiences I had shame around, which thinking that, you know, the way I am is wrong. I'm not the same way as other people. I'm not the way that I should be. And all of a sudden I'm looking back at it and it's like, there might be some, like, a biological explanation for this. So, it's been a little bit mind blowing, and it's also hard work. Like, it's kind of draining to when you're writing in this model. But the anecdote that I'll share about that is the conversation you referred to that we had before we started recording. So when I was in my yoga teacher training, we would do practice teaching and we would get feedback. And one of the pieces of feedback that I received was I speak in a monotone, that my voice is very soothing. It would be wonderful for like putting people to sleep, or they didn't say that, but maybe they did say that. I can't remember. in class, when you're winding down, you want people to get into deep relaxation. My voice would be great for that, but I needed to work on using my voice to energize people, to make them feel attention or like sit up and pay attention for a more active practice, to work hard in a more vigorous practice. And it's not that that's not valid feedback. You know, there's an art to using our voice, and it's expressive, and we can use it intentionally in different ways. But I also felt like just the way that I talk was being attacked. Like, that was my experience
as you're saying it, Elizabeth. My response under my breath that I'm sure the listeners heard while you were speaking was, what the fuck? Because what I'm feeling for you is, I didn't ask for that kind of feedback, and that doesn't actually feel good. But continue on.
Yeah, and I mean, it was interesting, because actually, like, I didn't understand at that time. That was like a huge surprise to me. Because that's not how my voice sounds to me when I'm talking. Mm-hmm. I sound very animated to myself.
You are. I mean, again, this was how many years ago that somebody said this to you? You were young, right?
It was 2009. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think in a silo at that time, at the age that you were, receiving something like that, if you were not prepared for that, could lead one to then questioning their being. Right? Did it lead to you questioning if I'm interesting or not, or where is that coming from? Or were you more confused about why they were saying such a thing? Or was it more of like, oh, that's your opinion, but that's not mine? I'm just really curious how you received that, because how I'm receiving it right now, knowing who you are and seeing you, you're not that at all. I can just say that right now. But I would love to hear at that time, if you don't mind expressing how you felt receiving that.
Sure. Well, I think you have shared some very beautiful kind of analyses. I think at the time it just felt like a knife to the heart, but I didn't understand why.
Right.
And so you're just with what you unpacked just there, you're helping me to understand like, what was that all about? Why did it feel that way to receive that? But I also think, there was a sense of like, well, this is just how I'm naturally talking and it's wrong. I think that's kind of the meaning that I've made of it as I've tried to understand why that felt really hurtful beyond just, okay, this is feedback that I can do something about now that I know.
And I think that's an important message for everybody to hear, no matter what we're saying to anyone about anything in your life, be cognizant of who is receiving that and how you're delivering it. Whatever the message may be in any situation, because people don't forget what they hear. And you cannot take back something once it's said or written and sent, right?
And we are all learning as we go. Like, right. I mean, I'm sure there are also like just different cognitive expressive styles. Like there are things people say that rub me the wrong way. And I'm just like, well, why did they have to say it that way? And just go aiming for understanding, I think. Stopping to ask a question before passing judgment.
Yeah. And oh my God, how many times I've asked for forgiveness from people if I've said something in a way that was harsh, sounded quick, sounded judgmental, sounded like I maybe didn't hold enough space for somebody at that time. I think it's really important to be able to say you're sorry. And then it's important for somebody else to be able to hear that and believe that you're sincere and then give the forgiveness if they feel that they want, and then allow for like more conversation. I don't want to push you along on this conversation. It's such an important one. I want to go back to what you were saying, because you were starting to talk about that conversation that you had with that person, that teacher telling you that you were very monotone. It was like a knife in the heart. Was there something that followed through with that, that led you to either moving forward and doing more speaking, or did it stop you?
Hmm. Well, I mean, I never forgot it. And actually, I don't teach yoga classes anymore, but I did for several years, multiple times a week. And I probably thought of that just about every time I taught a class. And I do still think of it now, if I'm doing videos and things. I mean, I notice that I'm slipping into a monotone a little bit sometimes, and I just make an effort to try to switch it up a bit. So yeah, I mean, I still think of that probably at least once a week. So it definitely made an impression. And it's, I feel like it's just a little bit of both, like, you know, like I was saying before, you know, there's a whole, you know, people study theater and they learn how to use their voice expressively in different ways. And that's not changing the essence of who they are. Someone can do an impression and that's not their real voice. But I guess there's like, there also is this feeling that like the way I talk just isn't, you know, isn't right.
No, it's not. And that's why I'm questioning so much what they said. You, first off, it doesn't really matter, but B, you are not fucking monotone. Anybody that's listening to the Sublime Soul Surrender podcast, if you can write back and tell us what you think, because I don't think you are at all monotone. Monotone is you do not change your timbre at all. You stay like, you're not talking like that. You've got emotion. You've got feeling.
Oh, thank you. Because
excitement. Yeah. And going back to the audience listening to this, if you have received comments from people that have made you feel uncomfortable in your skin, carrying yourself the way you do, I hope that hearing this can give you some sense of soothing, A, knowing that you're not the only one that's received that, that should never make it okay, but B, that you don't have to listen to anybody's fucking words about what their opinion is, because most of the times they're wrong. They're projecting something of themselves onto you, and it's more about them and it's less about you, because I will debate your monotony until the cows come home. And I don't even know where that phrase came from, because cows here, but
point the cows being, are never coming home.
They're all in India on the roads in front of my house. So I just really hope that everyone that's been told anything about themselves that's made themselves stop and question who they are can really stop and say, wait, is this the truth? Is this my truth? Because it could be the other person's truth being projected onto me, and you don't have to take it.
Well, yeah. And I mean, also, like, during this demo, I was thinking very hard about the words I was choosing and, like, trying to get the proper Sanskrit names for the poses. Am I giving the right instructions in the right order and using active verbs? Like, there's so many things to consider that, yeah, maybe I was speaking in a monotone. Okay. But also, receiving that feedback, like, there's just something that happens when shame comes in. It's this feeling like, okay, I'm just going to, like, move on and pretend that never happened. Like, yeah. I'm not going to think about it. I'm not definitely not going to tell anybody because I'm so embarrassed. And, like, as soon as shame is part of the equation, I don't know what the end of that sentence is, but what I want to say is, this has become this whole other thing that, look, now we're unpacking this years later, but I think I'm bringing this full circle to, this is the power of telling your story and writing your story. And this is why your story is worth delving into. Go and write about that incident and explore, like, why did I feel that way? Why did it have that effect on me? Really digging in, it helps you understand yourself. And then if you choose to share your story with the world, it gives other people a bridge of understanding into you and into themselves.
Yes. Oh my God. What a beautiful, powerful way to end this. I feel like we could keep talking. I mean, you and I can keep talking. I don't know how much of the community is still listening. I hope you are, because this has been such an incredible conversation. Elizabeth, you have so much brilliance to share. It is so much fun to talk to you in all the different capacities that I talk to you as your friend, as your client writing a book, with you as my coach and my editor, and right now together on this recording, sharing, like, intimate stories of your own life. Thank you for doing that. And then the supportive way people can maybe venture out into their exploration of their author within. And I invite people to check the show notes. I'll be putting down Elizabeth's Instagram if you would like to reach out to Elizabeth. And anything that you have that you'd like to leave as a parting thought for everybody before we close, Elizabeth?
I think that where we just ended things is the perfect note to close on, and we can leave it there. That's what I want people to remember, the power in telling your story, and that you, the listener, no matter who you are, you have a story worth telling.
Oh, so beautiful. I hope all of you have loved listening to this incredible conversation with Elizabeth, and invite you to come and comment, like, rate, do whatever you like with our podcast, as long as it's all good. Come back for more. We'll be back again next week. Elizabeth, thank you so, so much for being here. I'm sending you a big hug through the screen. And to all of you everywhere in the world, wherever you are, hope you have a beautiful morning, afternoon, evening, and night. And we look forward to having you come back again with us next week.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here, Elizabeth. Bye.